Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Joining us now, you can check out his fine work at brewcrewball.com. He just posted a piece on the offense and the conundrums that it poses. Tim Mumma joining us here on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline. Good morning, Tim.
Good morning, guys. Appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, of course. Before we get into the offense, I want to get your thoughts on this. You know, us sports talking heads, we love to throw out all these crazy topics, and one of them is, you know, if the Brewers get into the wild card game, who is the one pitcher that you would throw out there in that sudden death? I think the consensus is Jolie Chassin. Would you agree?
Yeah, that's a tough call. You go into that wild card game, you're treating it like a game seven, obviously, do or die. You know, I could see a scenario where they go with Hader to start things off. You go with what you feel is your most dominant pitchers and go from there. Obviously, the concern is, I don't know, can Chassin come out of the bullpen to give you any innings there? But, you know, if Hader goes 2-3 innings, Jeffress go a couple innings, you got Burns back there, obviously Knebel, Soria. You might piecemeal it together. If you're looking for an actual starter, you'd have to look at matchups, depending on maybe if you are at home, maybe Garrett gets the call because he's been pretty solid there. But Chassin, overall, obviously over the course of the year, has been the most consistent and somebody you can trust. So if you want to go with an actual starter, it probably makes most sense to go with him. But then in that case, in a wild card one game scenario, as soon as he runs into trouble, you start going to that bullpen.
I'm not going to lie. I kind of like that. You could literally fill out all nine innings just with the bullpen, even if you didn't have to go to Chassin in that. I kind of like that. It's the sudden death, man. You have to do whatever you can just to win that game and move on.
Yeah, I mean, I would love for them to be at least in that position. We're obviously hoping that they can get on a hot streak here and surpass the Cubs, but I think Brewers fans at this point would take that kind of excitement and drama, and assuming the bullpen continues to be solid, I'd like their chances in that game.
So you wrote an article, excuse me, Tim, you wrote an article on, I got a frog in my throat here, I don't know what I'm doing.
I do too.
Man. So you wrote an article in brewcrewball.com talking about the Brewers offense and the unpredictability of it. It has been really a topic of conversation both pre and post trade deadline. The Brewers made moves to improve in that category, and you get a chance to break these numbers down in a way that's a little bit beyond what the eye test is, and these numbers can tell you some things. And there's a specific statistic, batting average on balls in play, that you reference in this article as a nice indicator of the luck aspect of it. And for those who don't go into this aspect of it, can you kind of describe a little more about batting average on balls in play and what that'll mean for a hitter?
Well, when you look at the batting average of balls in play, it obviously means you're throwing out strikeouts and walks as far as valuing those plate appearances, and then also home runs, because obviously the defense can't make a play on those home runs in most cases unless you're Keon Broxton half the time. But it does try to give you an idea of is a team or a player hitting into some bad luck. You know, typically you're going to see the MLB average be around 290 to 310 as far as batting average and balls in play. And the article you referenced this year, the Brewers actually overall as a team are a little bit above average as far as their batting average and ball in play. So you go, oh, see, they're not unlucky. They're just not good. They're struggling. But you really break it down to certain players, it's kind of striking. And Travis Shaw is the one I really focused on because so many people were worried about Shaw and his numbers, at least his kind of the standard numbers you look at. But his batting average of balls in play is just 247, which is it's incredibly low. I mean, it's 31 points below what his normal average is for batting average of balls in play. So, and then you couple that with the fact that he's actually hitting the ball at a higher rate, harder at a higher rate than he has ever in his career. It's another stat that we like to look at, and that's hard hit ball percentage. Because you can only control so much where the ball goes. But if you're consistently hitting the ball hard, hitting line drives, hitting hard ground balls, even though it'll get through a lot of the time, you can kind of see that maybe there is a bit of bad luck. Maybe it's the fact that Shaw's hitting into a shift more often. But I think, you know, as you look over the course of a year, usually that stuff kind of balances out. And as you go over the, you know, multiple seasons, you'll see how it does even things out. But overall at the Brewers, you got guys like Shaw and even Moustakas who came over and Braun. I think people recognize that they're hitting rockets. They're just hitting them at people, or they're hitting into certain shifts. They're just unfortunately finding gloves at times, as you'd say. So I think when you look at it overall, you start feeling like that's going to turn around as the season progresses if they continue to do the things they've been doing. And I think if you look over the course of the last week, I mean, the Brewers have put up a lot of runs pretty consistently. Last night, being one of those explosive games. And I can see that as the year goes on here, that they have a couple hot streaks in them, including even guys like Moustakas and Scope. I know everyone's down on Scope right now, but he's gonna find that hot streak, and I think the team really is going to see the offense carry them a little bit, at least through portions of the final 2 months.
Talking with Tim Mooma of BrewCrewBall.com, and that led to my next question on Jonathan Scope, because I'm reading here, you know, with batted balls in play for Scope, it's 259, which is like 40 points lower than his average. So you believe that Jonathan Scope is going to figure this out. You're not freaking out about the guy. But my next question to that is, how often should he be in the lineup? Because I think the Brewers, for all things considered, need to go with that 7-deep lineup as much as they can here in the final 2 months.
Yeah, that's always the challenge with this stuff, because now you're getting into, as I said, the stretch run. And while you'd like to give guys chances and let them figure things out, you also got to play hot hands. And I know there are a lot of sabermetric type people who don't believe in that kind of thing. You can't predict the hot hand. Right. But, you know, just from my experiences of playing and coaching, you know, guys see the ball all of a sudden. Guys crush the ball, or guys get into funks that you just can't trust them. So I'm not freaking out about Scope by any means. He's not this bad. He's not as bad as he's shown. There are definitely some questionable things about his skill set and, you know, as far as his struggles, just even throughout his career, even when he had, a huge year last season. So I agree. I think for the most part, Council's got to run with guys that are seeing the ball well, hitting the ball well, putting the ball in play at times. We all know Scope struggles, and even in the field, it's been somewhat of an adventure for him. I think a big reason they brought him over as opposed to maybe a Dozier is because they felt he could fill in at that shortstop position with the struggles of Arcia and everything. But now you kind of watch it and like, I don't know if I trust that. So I agree. I love the lineup where they get 6-7 deep. I mean, it just makes such a huge difference. The pitcher can't relax as much. You don't feel like it's Lorenzo and Yelich and Aguilar and then hope for the best. So going forward, I think he's going to get his shot here or there. I think Council is going to continue to play kind of musical chairs with those guys. But in the end, if it were me with only, you know, a handful of weeks to go in the season, I do think you got to go with mostly that hot hand and find the right matchups on a day-to-day basis.
It is so interesting how the analysis of numbers and the changing of what's happened in the game have changed some of the basic principles of what used to be centerpiece in the game. And I'm not talking 100 years ago. I'm talking 10 or 15 years ago. Where I'm going with that is this. Could you imagine in 2003, let's say, someone saying, you know what, we're going to acquire a third baseman and we're going to move our other third baseman to second base, a position he's never played, essentially, because we want more bats in the lineup. Isn't it interesting how the fly ball revolution in the game, the fact that it's hard hit balls, line drives, and fly balls, and many fewer ground balls, have taken away what used to be one of the central tenets of the game, which is you win with being strong defensively up the middle. That's almost gone now, isn't it?
I think it's always a balance. The beauty of baseball, and obviously I'm biased because I love the game so much, but the beauty is over the course of, you know, 150 years or how far back you want to go with its origins, it's ever evolving. It's always changing. And sometimes it's to stop certain players. Sometimes it's to, find a different way to win. As we've gotten more and more along here, it even plays into factor. How do I get value out of the money I'm spending? Because, you know, the Brewers, in theory, can't keep up with your Red Sox and your Dodgers and your Cubs even to that point. So I agree. If you look back 15 years ago, you might not have seen this coming. I think people who really always love diving into stats probably were looking at other things that could help. Defense certainly does matter a lot. I mean, for us, I say us, the Brewers specifically, Lorenzo Cain being in center field, I mean, he's so valuable in that regard, just as an all-around player, but obviously his defense as well. But it really is finding that balance. Is your offense that you're going to get from certain guys, does that outweigh the potential struggles on defense? And the other thing you got to factor in as far as talking about the defense and some of the changes is really the aggressive shifts that teams use now. Another part of the evolution of baseball. I mean, I'm fascinated by it, and I think, you know, it's a great part of the game as much as some people want to say it's hurting the game. No, that's the way it goes. Offense adjusts, then defense adjusts, then pitchers adjust. So with all the shifts, and I think the Brewers talked about this with Shaw's move to second base, they're almost playing all over the diamond anyway. I mean, Shaw was moving over to the right side half the time when you had those big pull side lefties. So I think it's just, again, part of the game, part of the evolution as you go along. And I don't think it hurts it. I just think it gives you more stuff to talk about, more stuff to analyze. And in 5-10 years, there's going to be other stats or there's going to be other strategies that are going to try to counteract, as you said, the fly ball revolution and the shifting and how all that plays together. So to me, I'm constantly fascinated by it. And I know some of the old Dodgers are going to be against this kind of stuff. But it just gives us everlasting things to talk about and to analyze.
Yeah, no question about it. The game continues to evolve. I completely agree with you. It doesn't really bother me. And honestly, you know, stuff like the bunting controversy, just stop with that. If you're a pitcher, bunt, fine. But everyone else, come on, man.
That's been around a while, by the way. Not to interject here, but that's you could find research 15, 20 years ago that said when you bunt, you were playing for a run, one run. If you're playing for a crooked number, to use the Tony La Russa term, don't bunt.
Right. It's simple as that. Tim, I'm telling you what, man, we could go on for like another hour on this. This is really fascinating stuff. And I'm like way late. This is why Kevin and I don't host this show often, because we're like way late on the clock. So I'm just going to stop talking. Thank you so much for coming on. And we'll do this again soon.
Awesome. I appreciate it, guys. Thanks a lot.
Yep, you got it. Read his work, brewcrewball.com. That's brewcrewball.com. And that's Tim Mumma joining us on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline. Start your renovation journey with a simple and convenient pre-approval from Great Midwest Bank, dedicated to providing perfectly personalized home loans to those right here in our communities since 1935.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.